ShadowcastAudio.com presents The Masters of Horror, the anthology. Welcome to a world hidden behind the blinds of reality, a landscape waiting to be molded into a thing of pain and torture. This anthology is not for the faint-hearted. The ideas, themes, and disturbing images portrayed within will send your brain into overdrive on the road to madness. This book is guaranteed to rob you of sleep at night and bring you the nightmares you've most feared. You've been warned. Dr. Marty Young is a geologist, editor, and fiction and nonfiction writer. He is the founder and president of the Australian Horror Writers Association and has seen the organization grow to more than 200 members. Marty's horror fiction has been published in the USA and in Australia, and his essays on horror literature have been published in journals in Australia and India. He is also the co-editor of Macabre, A Journey Through Australia's Darkest Fears, an anthology showcasing the best Australian horror writers from 1836 to the present. You can find out more about Marty Young at www.martyyoung.blogspot.com.
Fireflies of the Bushfire by Marty Young. The burnt gum leaf fell from the sky just before dusk, settling for a moment on the footpath before scuttling off in the wind like an insect anxious to be on its way. Taylor's long, bleached hair whipped about his face, strands snagged in the thick stubble of his jaw, but it didn't seem to bother him as he watched the leaf. "Never seen one like this before," he said. His words were subdued, and that alone caused Grant to turn from the bruised sky to stare back at his friend. "You know, sometimes I think it's alive," Taylor went on, staring back. "The way it breathes, the way it reproduces by sending off burning embers. It's a ravenous beast, devouring everything in its path, eager only to feed and spawn." Grant had spent many nights philosophizing the hours away with Taylor, discussing reality over shots of whiskey. But the look Taylor would get before he would begin, that distant, dreaming look, wasn't there this time. "It leaps from tree to tree, house to house. I've seen it jump a main road and surge into the trees on the other side without slowing, almost as if the flames could think for themselves and were choosing the best way to go, the way with more food. Whatever hell thing it is, it has an insatiable appetite, and this one is hungrier than any I've seen before." "Jesus, Taylor. I'm serious, mate." Ash from burned vegetation speckled the top of his beer can. "This is going to get a damn sight worse before it gets any better, and it's going to get nasty. If you guys need anything, anything at all, you give me a call." He stared at Gemma. "Okay?" "We will," she said before flicking her eyes back to the thickening plume of smoke spreading across the horizon and upwards into the darkening sky. Grant looked at his wife. Her hair was as much of a mess as Taylor's, her face just as grim. The glass of wine seemed forgotten in her hand. They stood in silence then, each staring at the churning sky, watching as whatever battle raged in heaven tainted the clouds above them all with spilled blood. "I think I need another drink," Gemma finally said, looking down at her glass. Ash floated on the surface of a red one. "A fresh one." "Yeah, I reckon we need the stronger stuff now," said Taylor, tipping the last of his beer onto the sooty footpath. He crushed the can and led them back into his shed, where the bar was set up and all of the philosophizing was done. "Time to break out the shots, huh?" His grin was back. "Enough of the heavies for now. We can leave that for tomorrow and hope tomorrow gives up before it gets here." Grant stared at his half-full can. He knew morning would arrive regardless of their efforts, and then he'd have to face up to the reality of their situation all over again, no matter how he felt. That reality would be worse than now, too. Far worse. That thought alone decided him. Escapism seemed like wonderful oblivion, and perhaps the gods of dreams would hear his prayers and turn back the flames before he woke. Flames danced up trees and pirouetted amongst the branches. The ash and smoke, the corps de ballet, the supporting ensemble to the fluid performance of the fire as it leapt gracefully to the next tree, its hunger to devour more, consume the people, destroy their houses, its appetite insatiable, its desire voracious. Grant tossed about in bed, his mind sickening him with images of shattering glass, exploding gases, and the screams of people. "Look," Gemma said when she opened the curtains late in the morning. The sun struggled to penetrate the churning smoke. It hung dull and red in a battered sky. Grant didn't feel much better. "Oh, Grant, look at it." She stood there, staring at the approaching madness, her hands clasping the fabric to either side of her. Then she drew the curtains closed again and turned her back to the window. Grant remembered finding her standing in the kitchen one evening, her eyes closed, blood drenching the dishcloth she held against her thumb. "Too scared to look," she had said then, in case her thumb lay in the sink. Too scared to look now, in case she saw the flames raging toward them. Grant had to look away, too. Even in her black panties and bra, the outfit he loved the most, she looked terrible. Dark rings circled her bloodshot eyes, and the contrast with her pallid face was stark. She looked dead, like she had in his dream last night before the flames had come to make sure. He took a deep breath and made himself move before he remembered anything else. Getting dressed was a struggle, but soon enough he was off in search of the car keys. "I've got to get something for my head before it explodes," he told her as she followed him down the hallway. "Yeah, well, you guys did drink until 2. "Tell me about it. This goddamn smoke and heat isn't helping either. We could have stayed, you know." There was silence behind him. He turned. Gemma shrugged. "I wanted to get home," she said, looking away. Pushing the persistent and haunting dream from his mind, he went to her and they hugged. "We'll be all right, babe," he said, "and I'll be back before you know it."
"You'd better be."
"I hope we'll be all right," he amended silently before letting her go and heading for the door. There had been bushfires in the news for the past couple of sunburnt weeks now. Fires that had been started by lightning strikes out in the Namajew National Park southwest of Canberra. The fires had broken containment lines and had crept inexorably towards the city, 3 raging infernos merging into one as they came. It was something neither Gemma nor he had experienced before. They were from New Zealand, and this was their first summer in Canberra, their first in Australia. Bushfires didn't happen back home. Earthquake, sure, but nothing like this. A searing wind whipped the day, blowing in blackened debris from the direction of the fire. The smoky air churned his stomach and hurt his eyes as he hurried for his car. The outside world had made him want to curl up in bed and hide beneath the blankets as he used to do as a boy, but that wasn't an option. Once inside the car with the engine running, he turned up the air conditioning. His head pounded. "You and your bright ideas, Taylor," he mumbled, pulling out of the driveway. Sweat beaded on his forehead. Ghostly lampposts and barely formed houses penciled in the world around him as he drove down the street. He turned on his headlights, but that made little difference. Above, the streetlights shone through the thick smoke, but not even the halos of light offered any guidance in this terrifying new world. The radio was on. A part of him registered the frightened tone of the DJ's voice, but the actual words passed without comprehension as he focused on the road ahead. Oncoming cars remained gray as they passed by, driven by ghosts and with dim taillights marking their passing. He pulled into the parking lot and parked as close to the small supermarket as possible. Keeping his head low against the wind, he hurried towards the store where the automatic doors opened as he approached and closed again behind him. The blackened leaves that had followed him in soon settled on the linoleum with a crisp sigh. Grant took a few deep breaths, and the cool, clean air was rejuvenated. Only then did he realize how quiet it was. He looked around. Checkout operators stood forlorn in their cubicles at the front of the shop, all of them staring. Beyond them, he could see customers lurking in the aisles, barely shopping. They were like ghosts themselves. He licked his lips, tasting smoke. Come on, he told himself, thinking of Gemma. Get what you need and get home again. His phone suddenly vibrated in his pocket. He jumped. The ring echoed across the quiet supermarket. One of the checkout operators, a young girl, caught his eye, and her terrified expression held him captive. The phone rang again, breaking the spell. He took it out and read the display. Hi, Taylor, he said quietly, turning his back on the girl. You okay, mate? Bit hungover, but yeah, I'm okay. She's looking bad, mate, Taylor said with a static-filled voice, and for a second, a flame surged over her dead body like a wave. Have you heard the latest? Taylor continued as Grant shook away the image that had flared in his mind. They reckon spot fires are already causing havoc in Chisholm and Gordon. Oh, shit. Those suburbs are 10 minutes away at the most. I told you last night, didn't I? I said those flames were hungry. Is Gemma with you? She's at home, he croaked, keeping an eye on things. He wondered if she had died yet, then tried to shake away that horrible thought, shocked at how quickly it had come to him. Mate, this wind is going to spread embers all over the show. The flames are coming your way at breakneck speed. How's your house looking? Did you get things ready like I told you to? Taylor's strained voice was loud in his ear, but Grant barely heard him. A young man in an Alice Cooper t-shirt and blue jeans had stolen his attention. Grant watched as the man, holding a shopping basket filled with boxes of tea bags and cans of sardines, approached a checkout. His long hair hung down over his face, and he peeked out between strands. Mate, I know I'm sounding like a doom merchant here, but I can't remember what I came here for, the man said to the girl behind the counter. His voice was clearer than Taylor's. The basket he held trembled, the cardboard boxes rubbing against one another and sounding like brittle bones. I thought I needed tea bags, but I can't remember. Her eyes glazed with death, but still screaming as the fire lapped her face. The checkout girl looked at the guy with the trembling basket. One of her hands gripped the side of the till, and Grant could see the whiteness of her knuckles. He didn't hear her reply. She had made it. Grant, you there, mate? Listen, you've got to get back home and fast. If the front does what they reckon it will, those flames will be here before you know it. Gemma's a strong woman, but she won't be able to handle this by herself. Grant turned from the nervous pair and shut his eyes. He squeezed the bridge of his nose, but the pressure remained. I'm scared, Taylor. The automatic door slid open. He turned to see leaves and sticks announce a woman in a shroud of debris. The wind surged inside with its frantic cry, but the sound that chased it in was even more frightening. The woman had tear lines on her cheeks that had caused the soot to thicken into black tracks down her face. Her hair was wild, her eyes frightful, and her dress in disarray. She hurried past him and disappeared down an aisle, not bothering with prosthetics such as a trolley or a basket. She joined a group of customers milling about near the far end of the aisle, far away from the door. Oh God, Taylor. Grant nearly dropped the phone. It looks like midnight outside. Christ, I can't hear you, mate. What did you say? Taylor, it looks like midnight. It's pitch black outside. The supermarket had grown even quieter as those inside saw what had become of the day. Then there came a collective gasp from amongst the aisles, the sounds of shuffling feet as people approached the windows. Numb with shock, Grant stepped towards the doors. They swished open. The wind roared about him, its load buffeting and scratching. How could it be midnight? Taylor yelled words in an alien language, but Grant gave up trying to understand because in the distance came that bellow, a raging furnace, a crescendo of noise louder than the wind, louder than anything he had ever heard before. I can hear it, Taylor, he said, almost in awe of the incredible noise racing toward him. I can hear the flames. The phone slipped from his hand. Sounds like the end of the world. The day suffocated him with heat. It smothered him with noise and covered him in ash as he fled from the supermarket, stealing his breath and singeing his lungs as he ran. The sky from zenith to the eastern horizon was ablaze, as if the sun had exploded, and that tinted the midnight world red. Around him, people were standing looking at the approaching nightmare, not knowing which way to run, stunned at how quickly it had arrived at their door. They cast furtive looks at one another, hoping someone amongst them would help, would shepherd them to safety. Grant reached his car, unlocked it, and got in. As he turned the key in the ignition, the radio blared with an emergency alert siren and a frightened announcer saying, Chapman, Fisher, and Kamba are now on high alert. If you live in any of these suburbs, return to your home immediately. That's us, Grant whispered. Oh, Christ, that's us. He stared at the steering wheel, but it offered no comfort. The radio announcer continued in his urgent voice. Prepare your home by blocking downpipes and filling gutters with water. Hose down the roof, walls, and garden. Fill any pots and pans and buckets, even your bathtub, with water. I've got to get home. As if those words cleared his head and allowed his thoughts to flow, he looked down at his hand, but his phone was no longer there. He searched his pockets, checked the passenger seat, searched all around him. But it was gone. He stared at his hand again. Stunned that it should defy his needs in such a moment, he looked back toward the supermarket. More people were coming outside to stare at the surreal world. Some started jogging toward their cars. Others held one another. Plastic bags full of bread and milk and vegetables lay forgotten on the ground around them. He drove as fast as he dared, wary of those about him who were beyond rational thought and were now acting on instinct. Cars were reversing from parks without their drivers checking that the way was clear. Some stopped in time, others careened into passing cars. The smoke-filled day turned red as the flames drew ever closer. A siren rapidly approached, and then just as quickly faded into the smoky landscape, sounding tired and desperate for help. It was never once visible. Soon he pulled into his cul-de-sac. Some of his neighbors were loading up their car with valuables. They glanced at him before hurrying back inside to load up their arms with more. Gemma ran out to meet him as he turned up the driveway. She looked more like death than when he had left. Most of her hair had come loose from the ponytail and stuck out in strange directions, only for the wind to tear at and tug. Her t-shirt and jeans were wet. She screamed something at him, but he couldn't hear what. He pushed open the car door. The wind howled, but beyond the wind came that other sound, louder now, closer. She was on him before he could climb out. Oh, thank God. You didn't answer your phone. I kept trying, but you wouldn't answer. I lost it, he yelled back. All he could smell was burning. All he could see was smoke.
Come on!
She grabbed his arm and dragged him inside as the wind surged about them, eager to disrupt their plans. But even inside, they could still hear the sound of the approaching firefight.
The radio said there were fires everywhere.
The radio had also said to fill pots and pans with water. Grant ran to the kitchen with Gemma close behind him, only to find the benches half covered with pots of water. The floor was wet with puddles.
The radio said to do that. I've started moving things away from the windows, too, but...
She shook her head, then stared at him. Grant had never seen that expression on her face before, and it terrified him. He didn't know if he was capable of such responsibility.
Fill up all the pots you can.
Gemma nodded, and the jerky movements made him feel sick. In his dream, Gemma had suffocated on smoke, and the flames had danced over her body, melting her flesh and boiling her blood. She had stood then, her hair aflame, her eyes no longer there, but she had somehow known where he was, and she had come for him with her arms outstretched. She looked about to collapse now, but he didn't have time to comfort her. He hurried into the lounge and turned up the radio as loud as it would go. A tinny voice filled the room.
"Are blocked. If you live in Canva, return to your home and prepare."
"Oh, shit," said Grant, his hands going to his face. He struggled to catch his breath. He had to move, do something. He could hear Gemma in the kitchen crying, but he could also hear the sloshing of water and the clunking of pots. Her actions got him moving again. He ran outside.
"Grant? Grant!
I have to water down the roof!"
He grabbed the hose and started spraying water onto his roof, but with the violent wind and the weak water pressure, it was almost pointless. His neighbors were trying to do the same, with frightened looks exchanged between strangers who had never before exchanged words. The wind was ferocious, stinging with burning embers. A flaming twig landed on his lawn and set the dry grass alight. He turned the hose upon it, but even as he did, more glowing leaves and debris started raining down around him. The thickening smoke stung his eyes. Tears filled them up to provide a surreal image of an ever-reddening landscape. The embers found his house, and flames started licking the tiles. He heard Gemma scream from inside. The flames undressed her sensuously, stripping back her skin and muscle. But there was nothing he could do. Fire was all about, the flames delighting in the taste of dry, crisp grass and vegetation. "What do I do?" he screamed as the water in the hose lost pressure. He tried to remember what Taylor had told them last night, but panic robbed him of what little recollection remained after the binging. "Taylor, what do I do?" His neighborhood was filled with screams and crackling, the smells of burning, but above all, that cascade of fire, roaring and deafening, surging eagerly closer. The first of the flames rose up over the pines at the end of the cul-de-sac, and those trees bristled with fire. The front swelled towards him, a wave of flames more than two times the height of the eucalypts it had devoured, the air blistering and speckled with glowing embers. Grant dropped the hose as it sputtered dry and ran for the front door. He looked behind him at the oncoming nightmare, but what he saw was beautiful. Glowing embers danced in the sky, swirling on eddies and drawing patterns in the air before the onslaught of the front wiped them out. He stumbled to his knees. The anguished day sucked him of his strength. He gasped, trying to find air, but finding heat and ash instead. He forced himself to turn from that thrilling sight to stare at his front door, mere tormenting meters away. But those meters were miles, and he couldn't even stand. Then, on the peripheral of his vision, something moved, something close, a dancing ember, drifting, then swirling in the turbulent air, but always approaching.
and within that burning debris he saw form. You could almost believe that it's alive, you know? He blinked his eyes to clear the grit and soot that the image remained. He saw them clearly now as they flew down from the chaotic sky to set alight all they touched. Ember-sized bodies made of flames, hundreds in numbers and human in shape. His eyes burned as he watched them swoop, but he couldn't look away. Gemma had stumbled in her approach, and flames had spun loose. Little embers that danced on eddies of air, rising and sinking, skipping on the currents, spreading fire over their surroundings. The creatures touched his garden, and his roses set alight. The embers glared at him with raging eyes and twisted smiles, their burning wings spilling fire as they came. Then he heard Gemma scream over the inferno surrounding him. "Get up!" Her hands grabbed him, dragged him to his feet. "Grant!" He looked up. She screamed at him again. "Grant, we have to get inside!" He stumbled again. She didn't let go. The embers flew closer. He screamed. They howled. Fire rained down, the sky thick with burning, the air loud with the roar of the demons. The crescendo of noise burned his ears, and heat burned his back as Gemma slammed the door behind them, forever screaming, always screaming. The wind echoed her cry. Grant grabbed her, and they held one another tight, their eyes squeezed shut as the front roared towards them, screaming and roaring and howling and... And then the day turned still. Silence where before there had been chaos. Grant opened his eyes cautiously, frightened of what he might see. Even the wind seemed to have calmed down. "Gemma, look," he whispered, uncurling his arms from around her. "No, I don't want to." "It's okay." She opened her eyes, peeking, and Grant knew she was hoping not to see the thumb in the sink. "What happened?" "I don't know. The fire's gone. It just..." Their voices seemed to echo in the newborn silence. Grant went to the front window and peeked out. The outside world was hidden beneath the thick, churning smoke, but the red tinge was gone. Midnight had passed. The trees still moved with the wind, but the frantic movement of before was now an exhausted swaying. Small fires burned in their backyard and around the neighborhood. Hedges glowed red with embers. Flames danced among branches, but all without the intensity of before. "Amazing," said Grant, subdued. "The wind must have changed, just like that. It must have taken the fire back on itself." Gemma approached the door and slowly opened it. Grant joined her. She reached out for his hand, and he took it as she leaned into him. "That was us," she said. "Oh, God, that was us." He held her hand, thinking about the delicious grins of those strange ember-like creatures he had seen. They had been right there, almost upon him, their hands reaching out, so eager for his flesh. The fireflies of the bushfire. They would have screamed their rage at having been denied. "Before you saved me, I thought I saw..." "No." Gemma shook her head. They looked at one another, but didn't say more. Grant closed his eyes, trying to rid himself of those impossible images, visions created by panic and terror, that was all. Regardless of what he told himself, all that mattered was that the demon fire was gone, for now, taken elsewhere, taken to someone else's doorstep. He prayed the wind didn't change.
This has been a presentation of ShadowcastAudio.com and is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Copy it, share it, pimp it all you want. Just don't try to sell it or change it. We keep this going through you, the listener. For the duration of the Masters of Horror podcast, all who make donations to ShadowcastAudio.com will receive an ebook copy of the Masters of Horror. Just specify which format you would like. In addition, you'll also be entered to win a print version signed by myself, which will be given away at the end of the last episode. The music for the podcast is an original piece done specifically for the Masters of Horror by Christopher Carlson. Find more great selections at ChristopherCarlson.com. Thanks for listening.
Halloween, 2010. Nobilis erotica goes dark. Keith Duggar and Sue Taliaferro drag the Nobilis erotica podcast into the shadows and do unspeakable things with it. Hear four pieces of erotic horror at its most disturbing at nobilis.libsyn.com.